A door had already closed, and Blaze was trying hard to lock it and throw away the key. He hadn't touched her since Eric's call 2 days before, and didn't dare approach her. Once wounded and chilly, Blaze was suddenly intimidating. "Thank you," she said formally, as he looked at her with sad eyes. "I'm sorry, Blaze." It was all he could think of to say, and he meant it.
"Me too. Don't worry about it. You'll feel better when you're back in Massachusetts."
She didn't add, "with Megan," but the words were written on her face. "That's not a sure thing," he reminded her. She looked as though for her it was over, but for him it wasn't. "I just need to answer some questions and figure out what I want to do with the rest of my life." The way he said it reminded her again of how young he was. At her age, she had been on a path for years, but he was still looking for the right one. It was a vast difference between them, and also was a reminder to her that sometimes love was not enough. Simon knew he needed more. He needed a job that inspired him, a career he felt passionate about, and a woman to share it with him. He didn't want to be Blaze's boy toy or look like one. His own life had to have substance and meaning before he could join her. With Megan, he would always be the pathfinder and leader. He knew she didn't enjoy her work and wanted to stay home with the kids. With Blaze, she would always be the more successful one. In some ways, it didn't bother him. But if he came back to her, he wanted to do so on solid ground, standing on his own 2 feet. If she even let him come back, which, looking at her now, he strongly doubted. She had put as much distance between them as she could, living in the same apartment, since he had told her about Megan. "Is something wrong between you and Mom?" Salima asked him that night at dinner. Blaze had skipped dinner again and claimed she had another headache. "Did you have a fight or something?" Simon hesitated and put another slice of pizza on her plate. It was the one he'd made for Blaze with the truffle oil. He'd tried to bring it to her in her bedroom, but her door was locked and she didn't answer when he knocked. He texted her, and she didn't respond. The message was clear. She was suffering in private, while trying to appear fine to him. She was anything but. "I'm worried about her," Simon said to Salima, not wanting to share with her what was going on. He didn't know what Blaze was going to tell her, how little or how much. But Salima correctly sensed there was something major going on. She hoped it would blow over soon. Simon wasn't being much fun, nor was her mother, who was isolated in her room, pretending to be busy. Eric called Simon that night to tell him he had found a relief teacher they'd used several years before. She had just gotten divorced, had no kids, and was willing to step into Simon's shoes in New York, temporarily at least. She thought it sounded like fun, and was excited to do it. She was 3 years younger than Simon, but Eric thought she could handle the job. And Simon knew her and could brief her on what she had to do for Salima. "How soon can she start?" Blaze asked Eric when he called her after speaking to Simon. "As soon as you like. Tomorrow, if you want. She's all set to go if you want her. I think she should spend a day with Simon so he can brief her, but she's familiar with all our procedures, and she's a bright girl. She'll catch on fast."
"Fine. Then have her come down tomorrow," Blaze said in a strained voice. "Simon can come back to you the day after. I'm sure you're anxious to have him at school."
He had told her that the students were returning Sunday. A few had dropped out or made other arrangements, like Salima, but most were coming back to Caldwell. He was very sorry that Salima was not returning after so many years, but he understood. And it was good for her to be at home. "I'm glad it worked out so well with Simon. I was sure it would once everyone adjusted. I think Rebecca will work out well for you, too." They discussed the financial arrangements. She was going to work directly for Blaze, since Salima was not returning to Caldwell. She was giving up the cottage on the grounds, too. Eric had found Rebecca for Blaze as a favor, so as not to leave her in the lurch when Simon left. He knew how busy Blaze was, and that she needed someone with Salima at all times, particularly when she traveled. She had told him she was going to Lebanon the following week and Morocco in a month. But there was no way she could go to Lebanon now,
and leave Salima with a new person. Eric agreed to have Becky at the apartment at noon the next day. She would come to the city by bus in the morning and take a cab to the apartment. As soon as Blaze hung up, Simon called her. It was the only way to reach her. She was holed up in her room with the door locked. She had been crying before Eric called her and didn't want Simon to see her. The situation was miserable enough without his feeling sorry for her on top of it. She didn't want to look pathetic to him and hadn't felt this vulnerable in years. Not since Andrew. And the irony was that she had finally trusted someone and opened up. And now he was leaving too for another woman. It wasn't quite as simple as that, but it felt that way to her. "You talk to Eric?" Simon asked her when she answered her cell phone. He hadn't even been sure she would do that, since she hadn't answered his texts. "I know Becky, and she's pretty good. I think she and Salima should get along. Don't let Becky baby her, though. I'd hate to see Salima lose all the ground she's gained." But he doubted that would happen now. Salima had become her own person in a mere 3 months. "You could stay and do the job yourself," Blaze said sadly. In her heart of hearts, she was hoping he would change his mind and stay. She wished he could, but she knew it was out of the question. He had a contract to fulfill, and he was a responsible person. And he had a woman he felt he had to go back to, in fairness to all three of them. That was the part Blaze hated. She could sense that she'd already lost him, and knew how it would turn out. She honestly believed Megan was the woman he should be with, and that she wasn't. His relationship with Blaze had been a long shot, given their age difference, and she had lost. She had taken her chips off the table and gone home. Now all she wanted was for him to leave as soon as possible and end the torture of their situation as quickly as they could. She didn't want him to linger. It was too painful knowing he was right there and no longer hers. He was already Megan's, and now she realized he always had been. She had won him back by leaving her husband. "I wish I could stay," Simon said, and meant it. But he had to go back and face reality on all fronts, at work, and with Megan. "I'm sorry, Blaze," he said, wanting to hold her in his arms again and sleep with her before he left and make love together. But he was too respectful to do so. He knew how much he was hurting her, and he loved her too much to make it worse. He wished he could have them both. It was an age-old dilemma, and she'd been there before. "I'm sorry, too," she said as tears filled her eyes, and he could hear it in her voice. "That's life, I guess. Things don't always work out. It'll be better for you this way." She had already given him up in her mind, and he knew she was thinking about children for him again. "And your mom will be happy. She won't have to worry about how old I am." "That never mattered to me, your age, or my mom." She knew that was true. But Megan still had a hold on him that he hadn't freed himself of yet, and maybe never would. He had no idea now which woman was right for him, Meg or Blaze. And Blaze had taken herself out of the running, out of pride and self-preservation, if nothing else. "When are you leaving?" she asked in a choked voice. "Tomorrow." He had just finished packing when he called her. "Tomorrow night, if Becky seems okay to you." "I don't have any other choice. Eric says he doesn't know anyone else." "She'll be okay." But he wasn't as sure that Blaze would be, which worried him. She was taking his leaving very hard. "I'll stay in touch with Salima," he promised. "We can text each other on voice texting phone, or she can call me. And you can call me whenever you want." He hoped she would, but he had the feeling she wouldn't. And he was right. She knew she had to let him go now to lead his life and find his path with the woman he wanted. She wished it had been her. She was certain he would stay with Megan. He had invested too much time in her not to. After they hung up, it was strange knowing that she was in the apartment with him and not together. Her bed was so empty now. He might as well have been back at Caldwell. He'd already left her life, and she was setting him free because she loved him. All that remained now were the last agonizing details. She lay awake for hours that night thinking about him. And in his room, Simon was thinking about her, too. He had never felt worse in his life. He missed her acutely, even before he left, and he cried himself to sleep that night, as Blaze lay silent and awake in the moonlight in her room. They were worlds apart. Blaze ran into Simon in the kitchen the next morning when she went to get a cup of coffee. He handed it to her out of habit. She suddenly felt 1,000 years old and assumed she probably looked it and no longer cared. Simon hated to see her so miserable, but didn't tell her how beautiful she looked or how much he loved her. And Salima came in seeming depressed while they were talking. Her mother had told her the night before that Simon was going back to Caldwell and a new girl was replacing him, and Salima had cried when she told her. But she was relieved that her mother was letting her stay home instead of going to Caldwell. But she was heartbroken to be losing Simon from her daily life. Salima went to see him in his room after her mother told her. "What about you and my mom?" she asked him bluntly. "That's kind of on hold for now," he said vaguely, in an apologetic tone. "You mean it's over?" Salima looked sorely disappointed, and even more so that he was leaving, and on such short notice. "I don't know, it's complicated. I have to work some things out, and your mom probably won't want to wait while I do. It'll take some time." "I think she loves you, Simon," Salima said softly. She could hear how sad he was, and her mother's cheeks had been wet when Salima hugged her after she explained that Simon was going. "I love her too, and I loved my 3 months with you. I'll send you text messages every day." She could write hers by phone and receive his by voice. "Will you come to visit?" May seemed an eternity away to her when he finished the school year. "If it's okay with your mother," he said respectfully. "We're going to miss you at Caldwell. It won't be the same without you." But Salima was happy to be staying in New York. She had a wonderful new life there, thanks to Simon. And she didn't want to go back to the cottage there when Abby died. But she was worried about his replacement. "What if Becky is a drip and we don't get along? I had so much fun with you." "So did I," he smiled. "Your mom can find someone else if she has to, from one of the schools here. But I think Becky will be fine. Give her a chance. You weren't all that happy about me in the beginning either." They both smiled at the memory of Salima's early defiance. Becky arrived while all three of them were in the kitchen, carrying one small suitcase, and she looked daunted by the group. She said hello to Simon. He introduced her to Salima, and they shook hands, and then he introduced her to Blaze, who looked somber as she looked her over. She was too upset to give her a warm welcome, and Salima was no better. Becky looked worried when Simon showed her to a room next to his. "Did someone die, or is that because you're leaving? They look really sad," Becky commented as she set down her suitcase and looked around the tiny room and then back at Simon. "I guess they don't want you to go." "I'm sad, too. They're really nice people. Just give them some time. They'll warm up. This is a big change for them. It was an adjustment for them to have Salim at home and when Abby died. Now they're used to me, so you just have to keep her busy and establish a relationship with her yourself." "I'll try," Becky said shyly. Her personality was more like Abby's than his. "Don't baby her," he warned her. "She likes to get out. And she still won't use a cane or a dog. You can work on that with her." Becky nodded. She had long blonde hair she wore in a braid down her back and big frightened eyes. "What's Miss McCarthy like? Is she scary?" Becky had thought so when she walked in, but Simon knew she was just sad. "Not if you do your job well, that's all she wants. And she travels a lot, so you have to be fully responsible while she's away, and all the time." He took her out to the kitchen then, and showed her where things were. He walked her around the apartment, pointing out the piano where Salima had her lessons, indicated Blaze's suite, and then walked down the hall to Salima's room. Becky already seemed lost. It was all more than a little frightening to her. She was a simple girl who had grown up on a farm in New Hampshire and got into working with blind children when her mother went blind. Most of the staff had some kind of personal tie to their work. Salima was listening to music in her room and looked up when they walked in. She had recognized Simon's step, and she had heard Becky's, so she knew he wasn't alone. Salima looked sad, and her mother's door had been closed when they walked by it. Simon's heart felt like a rock in his chest. They went back to the kitchen, and he told Becky all the things Salima liked to do, and about her insulin pump, her aspirations for Juilliard, and how talented she was. He sounded proud of her when he had said it, and for a minute, Becky felt like he was a member of the family, not an employee. He was fiercely protective of both Salima and Blaze, and raved about them both. Blaze asked him to come to her office at the end of the afternoon. She had been there all day, and was tired and pale when he walked in. But he didn't look much better. They both looked strained, and he knew leaving was going to be hard. He was trying not to think of that as he looked at Blaze, and she invited him to sit down. He did, with a sigh. "What do you think of Becky?" she asked him directly. He had been with her all afternoon, describing the job. "I think she's competent and smart. I know she's reliable from working with her before, although it's been a while. I think she's scared, and it'll take her time to feel comfortable. But once she does, I think she'll do a good job. She's not an exciting person, or as fun as Abby, but she's nice, she knows what she's doing, and you can rely on her." "She looks terrified," Blaze commented, looking worn out. "You're a pretty impressive figure," he said gently, and Blaze smiled. "Is that what you thought when you came here?" "For a short time. I knew you wanted a woman in the job, but you made me feel at home very quickly. And I really wanted to make it work. Becky's more hesitant as a person, but I think she and Salima will warm up to each other with time. And Salima doesn't need as much help as she used to. Thanks to you." Blaze looked at him for a long time, and he nodded. And he had won them over in the beginning. "I don't know what to say, you know how I feel," he said, choking on the words. And she nodded as her eyes filled with tears. "Yeah, me too," she said softly. There was nothing left to say about Megan and all the rest. Blaze went to ask Salima then how she felt about Becky. And Salima said she was okay. She wasn't excited about her, and she wasn't Abby or Simon. She shrugged. She had no specific objections to her. She just wasn't enthused, and neither was Blaze, and Becky could sense it. But she had a feeling there was something else going on, and she didn't know what it was. Simon looked as distressed as they did, and Becky felt like she was intruding on all of them at a bad time. Blaze ordered pizza for dinner, and Simon had a slice before he left. He couldn't even finish it, he was too upset. And then he looked at Blaze, who sat at the table eating nothing, while Salima toyed with her salad, and Becky was embarrassed as she took a second slice. No one was eating but her, and she was starving. She hadn't eaten all day. "I'd better get going," Simon said, looking at Blaze, and she nodded. He had rented a car for the return trip to Massachusetts. He wished Becky luck and told her to call him if she had any questions, and then he hugged Salima hard. She burst into tears, and he told her to call or text him whenever she wanted. Blaze had walked into the front hall by then and was waiting for him near the door where he had left his bags. The others stayed in the kitchen, and Simon looked down at her and wanted to forget everything and stay. But he didn't say it and knew he couldn't. He took Blaze in his arms, and she didn't resist. She was soaking up the last feel of him, as she smelled the familiar aftershave on his neck and felt his powerful arms around her for the last time. "Take care of yourself, Blaze. Call me if you need me." She nodded and pulled away a little to look at him with a sad smile. "Be a good boy. Figure your life out. You deserve wonderful things in your life. And a great woman." She felt as though she were giving up her child and the man she loved. "I love you," he said in a choked voice, with tears in his eyes. "I love you too," she said in the saddest voice he'd ever heard. Because she loved him, she was letting him go. Somewhere in her heart, she thought it was right for him to go back to Megan and what he wanted. So she wasn't trying to hold on to him or stop him or convince him otherwise. Besides, she was too proud. It seemed cleaner to just release him with no strings. He picked up his bags then, opened the front door, and rang for the elevator. And a minute later, he was standing in it and looking at her. She gave him a small wave as he stared at her, and the door closed. She almost fainted as she walked back into the apartment. She wanted to scream. She had never been in so much pain in her life. It was a powerful reminder to her not to fall in love again. Chapter 14. The days dragged by after Simon left, and Blaise filled them, as she always did, with work. With Susie Quentin back in Miami, there was no one else lusting after her job for the moment, and she was working on upcoming specials, doing her morning segment, and planning interviews abroad. She put off the trip to Lebanon. She wanted to stay home for a few weeks to make sure that Becky was working out with Salima. Neither Blaise nor Salima had any real objection to her, although Salima said she was boring. She had the personality of a mouse, and she started off on the wrong foot. She took Salima's clothes out for her in the morning and put the toothpaste on her brush for her, trying to be helpful, and Salima snapped at her that she wasn't a child. She was almost 20 years old. Abby had done it for her, and Salima had liked it. But Simon had led her into a whole other world and treated her like an adult. Salima texted him several times a day, and he always responded. Salima always went discreetly into another room to listen to his texts, so she could hear them in private and not upset her mother. But Blaise didn't hear a word from him after he left, and was sure she wouldn't. She didn't call or write to him either, and hearing the sorrow in her mother's voice, Salima didn't mention him anymore, or tell her about the texts. "I'm sorry, Mom, about Simon," she said one Sunday night when Blaise was trying to cook them dinner. She was roasting a chicken and attempting one of his recipes for risotto. She burned the chicken beyond recognition, and the rice turned into cement. "I'm fine," she said about Simon, trying to believe it. She had to be. He wasn't coming back, and she had to take care of Salima and work. She couldn't afford the luxury of falling apart over a man, no matter how much she had loved him. She had learned that lesson with Andrew, and as though he had radar, Andrew had called the day after Simon left. Blaise didn't take the call and didn't even care. And for the first time, she knew she would never answer his calls again. She had no desire to talk to Andrew. She was finally healed. Loving Simon had freed her, no matter how it worked out in the end. "I guess I need a class at Cordon Bleu," Blaise said when they ordered sushi after she threw away the charred chicken and inedible rice. The smell was awful. Becky had offered to cook for Salima, but her cooking was even worse than Blaise's. Blaise felt like they had lost so much when Simon left. The laughter in their house, the excitement for Salima over their outings, delicious dinners, someone for her to talk to at night who cared about her. Now Blaise was left with silent evenings, too much work, and no one to ask her how she was. The only thing that made the atmosphere a little better was Salima singing with Luciana or practicing every night. By Valentine's Day, he had been gone for 3 weeks, and it felt like a year to Blaise. Salima was starting to adjust to Becky, who was trying hard. They'd made Valentine cupcakes that afternoon, for Salima to give to her mother to cheer her up. She knew how sad she was, even though she didn't talk about it or mention Simon's name. And when Becky said something about him in passing, Blaise always fell silent and changed the subject or left the room. She had bought a special Valentine cake for Salima, made with artificial sweeteners. It was a big chocolate heart with pink icing, which was a rare treat for her. But with careful planning, Salima could indulge from time to time. And Salima had bought her tulips, too. Luciana joined them in eating the cake after their lesson, and she asked Salima with some concern if her mother wasn't feeling well. Blaise was so depressed she looked sick. In her office, Mark was worried about it too and tried urging her to see her doctor, which she refused to do. "I don't need a doctor," she told him. "I'm just feeling down. No one ever died from that."
"You look too sad," he told her. "You're starting to turn green. You either need a vacation or a visit to the doctor to make sure you're okay, or a new boyfriend."
"I'll settle for my trip to Morocco to interview King Mohammed VI in 2 weeks." It would be the first trip she'd taken since Simon left. She felt confident she could trust Becky with Salima now. Becky was both knowledgeable and diligent about Salima's pump. She was going to interview the king and do a special on his fabulous fleet of fancy cars. He had priceless Aston Martins that he flew to England for maintenance and repair, and a lovely wife whom Blaise was going to interview as well. But a week before the trip, she was in bed with the flu and felt like death. She missed 2 days of work, which wasn't like her, and when she went back to the office, Mark put his foot down. "Let's talk straight here. I don't care how fine you say you are. You look like someone exhumed you. You never miss work, and you just did. I don't think you've eaten in 3 weeks, and to be honest, Blaise, you look like shit. If you get any thinner, you'll disappear. And I can tell you don't feel good. And you think you're going to make it to Morocco and back? I like my job, and if you drop dead in Rabat, I'll be out of work." She smiled at what he said, and she wouldn't admit it to him, but she felt as bad as she looked. Her stomach had been somewhere around her knees since Simon left, and she never ate dinner anymore. She was so exhausted that she came home and went to bed. "I'm so sorry Simon left and things didn't work out." He hated her being alone again, and he could see how bad she felt. "I'm just depressed," she said again, dismissing what he said.
"Then take antidepressants. You won't be able to do a good interview feeling like that, and it's a long trip."
They had plans to go out to the desert so he could show off his cars and the kind of speeds they could reach. Just thinking about the heat made her feel sick. Blaise knew she had to go on with her life. She was stunned to realize how much she loved Simon and how empty her life was without him. It felt like a wasteland. And she tried to put up a good front for Salima, but she couldn't even do that anymore. She was exhausted, and all she did was sleep when she went home, which she knew was a sign of depression, too. She had all the symptoms, and it didn't take a doctor to figure out why. She was sad about Simon, but she insisted to Mark in the office and herself she'd get over it. She had no other choice. He belonged to someone else, and she was an adult. She had to live through it. But she was concerned about the trip to Morocco, too. She didn't know how she was going to do it. The flu was hanging on, and she thought maybe vitamins would help. She didn't think she needed antidepressants, just time. She'd been through it with Andrew. But somehow, this felt worse. Because this time she had lost a good man, a great one, not a bad one who had lied to her. She dragged herself to the doctor on Tuesday afternoon. She was leaving for Morocco that weekend. Her doctor pointed out that he hadn't seen her for a year, which he thought was a good sign. "How have you been?" He was a pleasant man in his 50s, whom she only called on rare occasions, or for insurance exams for the network when she renewed her contract every few years. "Fine." She was not going to confess to him that she was suffering from a broken romance, only that she was working too hard and was tired. "Anything I should know about?" "I'm exhausted," she said honestly, "and I've had the flu off and on for the last month. I'm leaving for Morocco this weekend, and I thought I should check in before I left." He had a feeling that she wouldn't have done so unless she felt really bad. He told her there were a lot of bad flus around, and she might have picked up some bug on a trip or a plane. She told him she had been in the Middle East several times recently, but was always careful what she ate and drank bottled water. But she admitted that her stomach was a mess. "Have you lost weight?" "Probably a few pounds." It was more like 10, but she didn't tell him. She knew why. She wasn't eating. She had had no appetite since Simon left. The doctor checked her blood pressure and told her it was low, but not dangerously so. "That could be from the flu," he reassured her. "You don't need medication for it. I'm going to check you for anemia, too. That could account for how you're feeling. Anything else I should know?
Nothing I can think of. Just Simon, she thought, but didn't say. She felt stupid knowing that by now he was with Megan, probably happy, and she was pining for him and wasting away. She told herself she had to get a grip.
Are you sexually active?
He went down a list of standard questions.
Not at the moment. I was.
How recently?
His pen was poised over the paper to write her answer as she thought about it.
A month ago. I just ended a relationship a few weeks ago. But she didn't tell him how heartbroken she was. It was none of his business.
Could you be pregnant?
Hardly, at my age. I think I'm a little too old to get pregnant without technical help, she said, and he nodded. It was true. But accidents did happen, even at her age. She wasn't that old. 47 wasn't entirely out of the realm of the possible, even if unlikely. As she said, we used protection. They hadn't the first time, but it had been their only slip, and after that they'd been careful. Simon had thought they should be for her sake, although she wasn't worried about it with him.
Condoms?
She nodded.
You're not on the pill?
She shook her head, although she knew there were accidents with that too. But she'd never had a mistake of that kind in her life, except for Salima. She had always been careful and was responsible about it. And Simon had been too, even though she thought it unlikely she'd get pregnant. They hadn't taken the chance.
I don't think that's it, she said firmly.
Probably not, but it doesn't hurt to check. I'll run some hormone levels on you. Your estrogen may be low. This could be the beginning of menopause. That sounded even more depressing, and she said her periods were still regular, except less so since the shock of his leaving and her depression, and she'd been sick.
I think I'm anemic, or just run down.
You look fine, he said after he examined her. And I'll have the results of the blood work tomorrow. Give me a call. She left his office a few minutes later and went home. But she felt no better that night and went straight to bed. Salima came in to see her after dinner.
I'm sorry I'm such a bore at the moment. I can't seem to shake this flu.
How was dinner? Blaze asked her in a lifeless tone.
Okay. Nothing fabulous. I'm trying to teach her to make pasta like Simon, and souffle. She's not much of a cook.
Salima had learned a lot from him, and was trying to direct Becky. She had all his recipes written down in Braille, and a Braille cookbook he had given her.
Souffle may be asking a lot, Blaze grinned.
Simon had real talent in the kitchen, not just recipes. They talked for a little while, and then Salima went back to her room to chat with her friends on Facebook, and Blaze went to sleep. She woke up on schedule at 4 a.m. the next day and felt like death again. She was beginning to get worried and wondered what the doctor would say. Maybe he was right, and she had picked up some nasty virus on a plane or in a foreign country. She felt like she was dying, or at the very least seriously ill. She began thinking about leukemia or lupus. But in spite of how she felt, she did an excellent segment about the Middle East that morning. And the makeup artist thought she looked pretty, although she felt disconnected and dull, and the only time she seemed like herself now was on the air. She felt like an old, well-trained horse, who only came alive when she worked. And she was so busy that afternoon that she forgot to call the doctor. It completely slipped her mind, and at 5 o'clock, after he saw his last patient, he called her.
Well, I think we're getting there. You're definitely anemic. I'm going to prescribe some iron for you, Blaze. And I think you may have picked up a virus on a trip. There's not much we can do about it. A virus won't respond to antibiotics, so you'll just have to wait it out. You'll probably feel better in another week. Most viruses don't last much longer than that, and you said you've been feeling rotten for about a month.
It had been that long. She had felt fluish the week he left, and totally awful for the 3 weeks since. She was relieved by what the doctor said. At least it wasn't something really awful. She had to be able to do her job. Salima depended on her.
Thank you, doctor,
she said, sounding more relaxed. She had been slightly worried about the tests. At least he had a reason why she felt sick. Anemia
and a virus. And there's one other thing, he continued, as her heart skipped a beat. What if it was something terrible after all, and he had saved it for last? Serious?
That depends on how you feel about it.
You're pregnant. He said it, and Blaze stared at her office wall, trying to comprehend what he had said. I am? She couldn't believe it.
Yes, your HCG levels are quite high, which is a good sign if you want to keep it. From the dates you gave me for your last normal period, you're 10 weeks, the way we figure it, 8 from the date of conception, which must have been in early January. You're 2 months pregnant. And if that's not what you want, then you'll have to do something about it in the next month.
He said it matter-of-factly. Blaze felt like the air had been sucked out of her lungs. What in hell was she going to do?
You should call your gynecologist for a visit soon. She'll want to get an early sonogram, but apparently you haven't had any problems.
And as he said it, Blaze realized that she had missed a period in January, right at the time Simon left, and she thought it was because she was upset and not eating. And she had just missed one again. She had paid no attention.
You should be able to hear a heartbeat by now when you see your doctor.
Oh, my God. She almost threw up. No wonder her stomach had been so upset. She was panicked as she thanked the doctor, hung up, picked up her bag and coat, and started to leave the office as Mark looked up from his desk.
What did the doctor say?
He hadn't had time to ask her since the day before, and he looked concerned.
I'm anemic, and I picked up some kind of virus on one of my trips.
There was no way she was going to tell him that she was 2 months pregnant. She was not going to have another baby, especially now with Simon back with Megan. It was unthinkable. His silence confirmed that he'd gone back to her and stayed. She hadn't even wanted a baby while he was with her.
Well, at least you know what's wrong. Your doctor faxed over a prescription, by the way. I'll fill it for you tomorrow.
Thanks, she said, and flew out the door. She wanted to run away from everyone. But where could she go? Much to her relief, there was no one in the apartment when she got home. She had forgotten that Salima was going to a Mozart concert at Carnegie Hall with Luciana, and they had taken Becky with them. Salima wanted to expose her to the cultural events she knew nothing about and had never experienced before. Becky was starting to really enjoy New York, and although she wasn't Simon, Salima liked her. She was an honest, decent, kind girl, wanted to learn, and tried hard. And Blaze agreed. When Blaze walked into her room, she stared out the window at Central Park. There was still snow on the ground, and she tried to keep from calculating 7 months forward to when this baby would be born. It was due the 1st of October. She didn't want to give it a birthday. She didn't want it at all. She thought of calling Simon, but that seemed so wrong. She was sure he was back with Megan. His silence since he'd left confirmed it to her, and she'd been very firm about letting him go and not trying to hang on to him. And even if she was having his baby, she didn't want to use it to lure him back to her. He needed to be with someone his own age. But this was a disaster for her. The last thing she wanted was to have a baby alone at her age. It had been hard enough with Harry, who was never there, and an uninterested father, although his real lack of interest had only happened when Salima got sick. Before that, he'd been sweet with her, when he was home, which wasn't often. And Blaze had traveled just as much as he did, and now she traveled more. There was no room for a baby in her life. And what would Salima think? And the network? 1,000 things were racing through her mind as she lay down on her bed and started to cry. And then she told herself that there was nothing to be scared of. She would have an abortion, and no one would ever know. But what about Simon? Didn't he have a right to know? Her mind was whirling as she lay in tears on the bed, utterly exhausted and overwrought, and fell asleep. Chapter 15. Blaze told no one what she had discovered and didn't intend to. The only one she would have told was Simon, and that was out of the question. Blaze was sure that if he hadn't gotten involved with Megan again, or had broken up with her, he would have called her. Simon had said he loved her when he left, but by now everything could have changed. He was young and had been very confused. But his total silence for the last weeks confirmed to Blaze that he was out of her life for good. And now she had a decision of her own to make. At first it seemed so simple. There was no room for a baby in her life. She was too busy. She had a daughter who needed her full attention and help when she wasn't working. She traveled all the time. She had no one to lean on or take care of this baby if something happened to her. And most of all, she felt she was too old. But apparently God didn't think so if she had gotten pregnant. Or was it just an accident of fate? A cruel joke life had played on her. She was 47 years old, pregnant, and alone. What the hell was she going to do? She didn't even know why she kept asking herself that question. She knew what she was going to do. So why did she keep asking herself? She wondered. And all she could think of was how sad Simon would be if he knew what she was going to do. She felt as though she was stealing this baby from him. But he was out of her life with Megan. Of that she was sure. It canceled his rights to her body, her life, and their child. Or did it? Blaze was still torturing herself over it when she left for Morocco. And if she hadn't felt so tired and queasy, it would have been a fabulous trip. King Mohammed VI and his wife, Princess Lala Salma, were a charming couple. They did everything possible to honor and entertain her. The princess was a huge fan and showed Blaze all over Rabat. They had beautiful children, and the palace was incredible. She stayed at the Latour Hassan Hotel and had dinner at the palace every night. And the taping they did in the desert with 30 of his fabulous cars and the king driving at full speed and even driving Blaze in one of his Aston Martins was a segment she knew all their male viewers would love. And the tour of the palace with the queen was spectacular and magical as well. Blaze thought it was one of the best shows she'd done in a long time, and her crew agreed with her. The only problem she had was that she felt sick a lot of the time, but she overrode it with determination and willpower. She was a pro, and managed to get everything done. She remembered now that she'd been just as sick and worked just as hard before Salima was born. For Blaze, work always came first, and she had even more reason to stick to a routine this time. She was not about to jeopardize her job. She went to Marrakesh for a few days on the way home to relax and stayed at the newly redone Hotel Mamounia. And she spent a day in Paris and a night at the Ritz. It was the first break she'd taken in a while. And she strolled through the Place Vendôme and down the Rue de la Paix, thinking of the decision she had to make when she went home. She kept telling herself she still had time, but not much. She wished that she could talk to Simon, but she knew that that would be wrong. She had no hold on him now, nor should she. She had had no word from him, nor any contact since he left. She had encouraged him to go back to his own life and find out how he felt about Megan, and that was what he had done. She had no right to reach out to him now, if he had shown no desire to contact her. He had a right to his freedom, and she had to deal with this on her own. Blaze didn't know it, but Salima had told him, in the many texts they exchanged daily, that her mother was in Morocco, interviewing the king and queen, and then a few days later that she was in Paris on the way home. Simon didn't comment, but Salima liked to give him news of her sometimes. And as Simon read the text from Salima, he thought about the life Blaze led. It was one of the great differences between them. She was a world-famous, glamorous network star, a woman of great accomplishments, and he had done so little compared to her. But even if he was satisfied with his life, he had enjoyed hers. He missed being part of it and being with her and Salima. He always told Salima how much he missed her, and she told him she was teaching Becky to cook from the recipes he had left. Salima quipped to him about her, "I cook better and I'm blind," and he told her to be nice. He loved her texts and emails, and they communicated daily, often many times. Salima respected his opinions about everything and his advice. He was her hero. But she was getting on well with Becky after a month with her. She just wasn't an exciting person or as much fun as Simon, but she was willing to learn. Salima was busy every day now with Luciana, preparing for her audition at Juilliard. She had taken a tour of the school with Luciana, and all Salima wanted now was to get in. Luciana had written a recommendation for her, which Salima hoped would carry some weight. Her audition was scheduled at the end of March, and she texted Simon that she was worried about that too. Hearing what she was doing made Simon miss them all the more. Blaise was startled when her BlackBerry rang in Paris. It was from a blocked number, so she answered. It was Andrew. She hadn't talked to him in a long time and didn't want to now, but he had caught her by surprise, and she didn't want to be rude and hang up. "Where are you now?" he asked her, envisioning her in New York. He was at his office, and it was morning for him. For Blaise, it was the end of the day. And his voice sounded as sultry and sexy as it always had, when it made her knees go weak. But this time, it didn't. She was bored listening to him. "I'm walking around the Faubourg Saint-Honoré in Paris to do some shopping," she said matter-of-factly. "You lead a golden life," he said, aware that she didn't sound excited to hear him, or even interested in what he said. "I guess I do." The trip to Morocco had done her good. She felt a little better physically, and being in Paris even for a day was exciting. She had just spent 3 days with a king and princess visiting a gorgeous palace, had a rest in Marrakesh, lying in the sun and exploring the souk, the bazaar filled with treasures, and she had bought a mountain of fun things for Salima, including a vest with little bells she knew she'd love. And now she was in Paris, about to do some shopping and staying at the Ritz. Simon had told her once, when she was agonizing over the threat of Susie Quentin, not to forget who she was. And now Susie was gone. Blaise was still herself, a successful, powerful woman with a golden life, as Andrew said. The only thing missing was Simon, but not Andrew anymore. She didn't miss him at all. "Why don't I call you later?" he suggested. "You sound busy." He could hear the traffic noises behind her as she crossed the street toward Hermès. "I don't think that's a good idea," she said, standing in the late afternoon March sunshine on the Faubourg. "Are you there with someone?" he asked, pretending to sound jealous, but she doubted that he really was. It was just an act he put on, like everything else. Suddenly he sounded sleazy, and none of her memories of him were good. At least Simon had been a decent person and genuinely loved her, even if he was young and confused. "No, I'm not," she said in answer to his question. "I'm alone and enjoying it thoroughly." She didn't ask him about his wife this time. She didn't care. It had taken her almost 5 years to get there, but she had finally arrived. "Don't call me later, Andrew. I have nothing to say, and neither do you." He was shocked when he responded a minute later after a startled pause. "What's gotten into you?" He sounded hurt, but she knew he wasn't. Only his ego was bruised. He had no heart. "I guess I finally got over you. It was long overdue." He didn't know what to say. So for a moment he said nothing, sure that she'd warm up to him again. She had loved him so much, but that was old news. "Thanks for the call," she said, "but don't do it again." And before he could say another word, she hung up. She stood outside Hermès, laughing to herself out loud and feeling great. She walked into Hermès then and bought herself a gorgeous yellow bag, a Birkin, 3 scarves, and a bottle of perfume. And for once, finally, as Simon had suggested, she knew exactly who she was. When Blaise got back to the apartment in New York from the airport, Salima was practicing with Luciana, and Becky was in the kitchen with an anxious expression trying to make a souffle. For a fraction of an instant, it made Blaise sad and reminded her of Simon. But poor Becky looked so incongruous and so stressed that Blaise laughed. "Don't feel bad," she reassured her. "I can't make one either. How's everything?" she said, putting her travel bag down and taking off her coat. She looked well and was feeling better, and she had slept on the plane. "Salima okay?"
"She's fine," Becky said as she slid the ceramic dish into the oven and smiled at Blaise. "We had a nice time while you were gone. We went to see a Broadway musical. I'd never been to one before. It was great." She was discovering a whole new world in New York. and this time Salima was playing teacher and enjoying it a lot. Becky was only 10 years older than she was, but they looked about the same age. She was a nice, wholesome country girl, and Blaze had grown fond of her in the past 8 weeks. Blaze went to change her clothes and unpack the things she'd brought home for Salima, and she had brought a sweater home from Paris for Becky, in a pale blue, the color of her eyes. And by the time Salima finished her lesson with Luciana, Becky was pulling the souffle out of the oven with a terrified look, and then a groan of dismay. Blaze had just walked back into the kitchen and smiled. Half the souffle had risen perfectly, and the other half had fallen, so she was improving, but not there yet. Salima told her what she'd done wrong when Becky explained the situation to her. She'd gotten strict advice from Simon on it, and Blaze said it didn't matter. It would taste good anyway, and it did. The three women chatted at the kitchen table, and for the first time in nearly 2 months since Simon had left, the atmosphere was lighter. All three of them laughed, and Blaze told them about her trip and then gave them their presents. It felt like home again, and not because of Simon this time, but because of the three people who were there. Becky loved her sweater and thanked Blaze profusely. She had never had anything from Paris. And Salima loved the Moroccan vest with the little bells. It was the first night that Blaze hadn't gone to bed early, feeling crushed. The trip to Morocco and Paris had done her good, and Mark could see it the next day. She looked fresh and alive on the air, and when she strode into her office, Mark told her how great she looked. "Those vitamins must have really helped," he said, looking relieved. "No, I think Paris did. I had fun. I went shopping all by myself." And then she giggled evilly. "And when Andrew called, I blew him off." "Hallelujah," Mark said, celebrating the victory. And then Blaze got to work. She wanted to see the interview she'd done in Morocco and check how they edited it. Blaze spent a nice weekend with Salima and Becky. She took them out to dinner, and they had fun, and in quiet moments alone, she wrestled with her decision. She knew she still had time, but not too much. She'd already made up her mind to have the abortion, but she was dragging her feet and hadn't called her gynecologist to schedule it yet. She was planning to, but now and then she'd wonder for a minute what it would be like to have a baby there, with her and Salima if they could manage it, or if it would be more than she could cope with. She had always thought it would be, but the subject had never come up for her again since Salima, nor did it have any appeal. Now, for only brief seconds, she let herself fantasize about it, and then shut down again. She wondered if she was sentimental because of her feelings for Simon, but she knew that if she had this baby, it would be hers, not theirs. He had the life he had begun with Megan, and would have the children he had with her. If she had it, which wasn't even a possibility in her mind, she planned to notify him when it was born and make some kind of visitation arrangement. She wouldn't share the pregnancy with him, and she had no desire to be a burden to him or use it to create a bond he didn't want if he was involved with someone else, which was the case. His silence for the last 2 months made that clear. She had told him not to call her when he left, assuming he'd be with Megan. She didn't want to be the other woman in his life, or older ex-girlfriend he felt sorry for. She had wanted him all to herself, but she realized now what a loss it was not to hear from him at all. And at this point, he had inadvertently become a sperm donor and nothing more. Her feelings for him were irrelevant. She still loved him, but in a distant, benevolent way, knowing he had moved on. The agonizing pain of the first few weeks after he left had begun to dull. It was more of a chronic ache now, one that she could live with, a void she'd have to learn to fill with other things. And if by some insanity she had the baby, he could see it and spend time with it. But she no longer expected to have a relationship with him, or even hoped for one. All she had to do now was make the decision about whether to have the baby. She called her doctor on Monday, a week after she got back to work. All weekend it had been gnawing at her that maybe at her age it was a miracle she had no right to reject. She just wasn't sure. And there surely wouldn't be another opportunity. "What are you going to do, Blaze?" her gynecologist asked her when Blaze left work early to see her on Tuesday afternoon. She had been awake the night before until the sun came up, wondering what to do.
I don't know. I feel a little crazy and conflicted about having it. I've never wanted another baby.
She didn't tell her that she hadn't wanted the first one either. Both pregnancies had been accidents. And she felt like at her age, she should have known better. But they'd been careful every time but once.
My daughter is type 1 diabetic, and all the genetic counselors we saw told us that it would probably never happen again. I really wouldn't want to go through it. And she lives at home now and is blind, so I have a lot on my plate already, and a big career. And I'm not involved with this baby's father. We broke up 2 months ago.
The gynecologist looked sorry to hear it.
Is he a nice guy?
Very. He wanted a baby, and I told him I couldn't get pregnant at my age, and I thought it was true, she said ruefully. He's involved with someone else now, so if I do this, I'd be on my own.
I had a 51-year-old woman in here last week who thought she couldn't get pregnant either. Nature surprises us sometimes. You have to do what's best for you, particularly if you're doing it alone.
What's she doing about it? Blaze asked about the 51-year-old woman.
She's having the baby.
But she's married, and her husband is thrilled. They'd even considered adopting, so this works for them.
What about you? Have you told the father?
No, and I'm not going to. We're not in contact. I think it's best that way. I'll tell him if I have it, but I want to make the decision on my own, because if I have it, he won't be around to help me. I don't know why I'm even thinking about it. I was sure I was going to have an abortion, and I probably am. But I keep wondering if it's some kind of gift. At my age, maybe it is.
The doctor smiled, looking noncommittal. She didn't want to interfere.
You have about 2 weeks if you want an abortion, she said simply, just to let Blaze know the time frame. And if you decide to keep the pregnancy, you should have a CVS next week to check for genetic anomalies. It wouldn't be recommended after that, and in that case you could have amniocentesis. But I think CVS would be a good idea, so you should try to make the decision this week. She was 2.5 months pregnant, and the sonogram the doctor did after that showed a strong heartbeat, and Blaze could see the baby on the screen. She tried not to think about it after she left the doctor's office. This was not about the baby and what had caused it, her love for Simon. It was about her life and what she thought she could handle or not. Her responsibility for Salima was huge, and Harry was no help. She did it all alone. And she would this time, too. She was sad again that Simon had gone back to Megan, but he had. Now she had to figure out what to do about this baby, abort it, or have it on her own. She lay on her bed when she got home, and all she could think of was having a baby in her arms again. Simon's baby. Even though she kept telling herself that he would never be part of her life again, and he belonged to someone else, she knew that the baby was his, and the result of their love. And even if they had only been together for a brief time and weren't meant to be together forever, they had loved each other deeply. And the baby that had happened as a result was undeniably a gift.
You're so quiet, Mom,
Salima said on Sunday morning when she walked into the kitchen and Blaze was sitting there staring into space.
I was just thinking.
What about?
She thought her mother sounded in better spirits lately, and that she had had a hard time at first when Simon left. But recently, she seemed more like herself.
I don't know. I was thinking about work, the show I did in Morocco, nothing special. She lied to her. She had to make the decision by the next day. Salima was sure she was thinking about Simon, but didn't want to ask. Salima had already had 2 text messages from him that morning. He had remained faithful in their correspondence for the past 2 months. But he never mentioned Blaze. He wanted to keep his relationship with Salima pure and untainted. He wondered about her and missed her, but didn't want to use Salima for information or to pass messages to Blaze. If he'd had something to say to her, he would have said it himself. Blaze went back to her room after breakfast and spent the day in her office at home doing work, while Salima and Becky went out. And by the end of the day, when they met for dinner, Blaze looked exhausted. She was torturing herself about the decision and hadn't made it yet. and as she lay in bed and looked at the moon that night, she was still undecided, torn either way. And she lay there thinking about when Simon had been in that bed with her and the wonderful time they'd shared. She felt peaceful when she fell asleep that night, hoping she'd wake up in the morning knowing what to do. And then, for no reason, she woke in the middle of the night. The moon was still shining brightly, and she had 2 more hours to sleep before the alarm went off. And as though someone had spoken the words clearly, she heard a voice in her head. "It's a gift." The voice said it so loudly she almost heard it in the room as well. "It's a gift," she said to herself as she went back to sleep, remembering Simon in her bed. The decision had been made. Chapter 16. Blaze had the CVS test the doctor had recommended the following week, and she went to have the test alone. It was invasive and there was some risk of miscarriage, but it would give them the information that the baby was genetically healthy, and if she wanted to know the sex of the baby, they could tell her that too. She told them she wanted to know, and she had 3 or 4 weeks to wait until the result, and she was nervous about it. Now that she had decided to go forward with it, she hoped everything would be all right. The baby was due on the 1st of October, and she had decided to tell Salima when it showed, which it didn't yet. She was very slim and in good shape, and she was only 3 months pregnant, and she wanted to keep it from the network for as long as possible. She suspected they wouldn't be thrilled, but she was going to take very little maternity leave, just as she had done with Salima. She didn't want to take a lot of time. There were too many projects to finish, and someone else would be taking her place if she did. And she was still adjusting to the idea of having a baby. She was somewhat in shock. She covered a story in South Africa the week after she had the CVS test, and from there she went to London and attended a royal wedding as a guest. She was back in New York 10 days after she left, with lots of stories to tell Becky and Salima. She was continuing her busy life, unhampered by the pregnancy. "You lead such a glamorous life," Becky said, still in awe of her. "No, she doesn't," Salima interjected. "She still hangs out with us." And to prove it, they went bowling that night. And they all had fun. Salima said she deserved a handicap, and Blaze said she would probably play just as badly if she wasn't blind. "Yeah, just like you can't cook," she teased her mother. "And neither can Becky." "Yes, I can. I finally got the souffle right last week." It had become an obsession with her. Her trial by fire, a rite of initiation, and she had passed. "Yeah, with Simon walking us through it. That's like painting by number," Salima said, teasing her. But she'd been impressed, and the souffle was good. "Well, it worked, and I did it," Becky said victoriously. Blaze was getting to like her more and more, and so was Salima. And Blaze tried to ignore the fact that her heart gave a little flutter when Salima mentioned Simon. She knew he was still very much in touch with Salima, although he'd vanished completely out of her life, except for the baby in her womb. She was going to tell Salima that Simon was the baby's father, but no one else. And Simon, of course, when it was born. But she wanted to keep any press interest in her pregnancy as minimal as possible. And she was hoping to keep it from the network till May or June. Her doctor said she could travel till August, and sitting at a desk during her morning segment, the viewers wouldn't have to know until she gave birth. Blaze had plenty to keep her busy. Salima was preparing ardently for her recital on the Memorial Day weekend in May, now that the audition for Juilliard was over. Luciana had taken her to her audition when Blaze was in London. Salima was hoping for a response by May or June. She was desperate to get into the school, located at Lincoln Center, with 3 students to every teacher, small classes, fabulous instructors, and dedication to handicapped students. And Blaze had sweeps week to think of in May for the ratings, which had the whole network in an uproar 2 times a year. They were planning to show her interview with the King of Morocco during that time, because the producers of her show thought it was so good. She was going over a stack of research for her new projects toward the end of April when her doctor called, and Mark put the call through